For those of you who may not have heard about it or be aware of it, tonight we're hosting a countywide youth devotional. And some of the youth from other congregations are already here. I know the Camarillo congregation has a contingency here, and we want to welcome you from Camarillo and from wherever you may be. We're glad that you could be here tonight. And with that thought in mind, I designed what I was going to say tonight to speak primarily to teenagers. The rest of you can just listen in if you'd like. Although it does involve and speak to parents as well, so if you are in that position, no matter how old a parent you may be and how old your children are, you may want to listen in as well. There's a woman that wrote about teenagers and has some things I think that are worth listening to for both parents and teenagers, as well as those who are in a matter of months going to have their first one, Ryan. She wrote this: "I just realized that why children are dogs, loyal and affectionate, teenagers are cats. It's so easy to be a dog owner. You feed it, train it, boss it around. It puts its head on your knee and gazes at you as if you are a Rembrandt painting. It bounds indoors with enthusiasm when you call it. Then, around age 13, your adoring little puppy turns into a big old cat. When you tell it to come inside, it looks amazed, as if wondering who died and made you king. Instead of dogging your footsteps, it disappears. You won't see it again until it gets hungry, and then it pauses on its sprint through the kitchen long enough to turn up its nose at whatever you are preparing for dinner. When you reach out to ruffle its head in that old affectionate gesture, it twists away from you, then gives you a blank stare as if trying to remember where it has seen you before. And we parents don't make it easy on our teenagers either. One night, a family was watching a movie together about a boy who searches for the perfect parents, only to find that his own parents really do love him. After the film, the mother thought this was a good opportunity to ask her teenage daughter if she ever wanted to find another set of parents. And the daughter said, "No, Mom, you and Dad are so moody that it's like having a different set of parents every day." Michael Jackson, the singer, died just a matter of weeks ago. But several years ago, he was talking with an interviewer about his father, Joe Jackson. Joe was known for being a tyrannical parent to all of his children. Michael said this about his father about 8 years ago. He said, "It's much better. My father is a much nicer person now. I think he realizes his children are everything. Without your family, you have nothing. He's a nice human being. At one time, we'd be horrified if he just showed up. We were scared to death. He turned out really well. I wish it wasn't so late." I suspect that there are some teenagers, not so teenagers in this room, who could say the same thing about their parents. "I wish it hadn't been so late, because we were scared to death of him." Every parent has to deal with their own failures. There's things that every parent wishes that they had not done. There are things that get between them and being the person they want to be. And it can be any number of things, any kind of things. King David of Israel was a godly man. In fact, God said that David was a man after his own heart. And yet, David was guilty of multiple marriages. He was guilty of watching a naked woman bathe. He was guilty of having an immoral relationship with her. He was guilty of getting her pregnant. He was guilty of having her husband killed. And on top of all of that, he was guilty of trying to cover it all up. This was the man after God's own heart. David had spent his life primarily as a warrior. He had had several children, But it becomes pretty obvious that as they get into adulthood, David had not bothered to teach them to be godly. One of his sons tried to actually run David out of town and take over the throne himself. One of his sons raped his own half-sister. And some of his children outright hated one another, if in fact all of them didn't hate one another. They were, to put it in a colloquial term, a mess. The whole family was a mess. And this was the man after God's own heart. This was a man who, in so many ways, loved God and wanted to be devoted to God and wanted to be godly. And yet he was very much a human being. He was a man who failed time after time. But David tried to correct his mistakes with his son Solomon. He tried to teach him godliness. We don't know how much, we don't know what all settings, but there's obviously some effort on his part to teach Solomon, his son, to be godly. At first, Solomon appeared to be very godly. When you read about Solomon taking over the role of king from his father David, you read this wonderful prayer, this lengthy, very godly prayer that he made to God as he took on that position. He thanks God profusely. He asks God for very little, and God then gives him very much. And so even as Solomon started out, it seems, to be very godly, we find that from history and his own writings, life for Solomon was all about him. He had 700 wives and 300 more women in his harem. In his desire to outdo his father, he spent his nation into bankruptcy and had to sell two of the cities in his nation. Can you imagine a president today having to do that? Can you imagine what would happen if he did? In the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon tells of all the things he did to satisfy himself. And he says that all of it failed. In his later years, though, to his credit, he saw his mistakes. And so he wrote the book of Proverbs. And he wrote it as a series of lectures to his sons. Just what every son wants to hear from his father is a lecture, right? And so I guess we can blame Solomon as being the first to actually put those lectures in writing. The first 9 chapters are directed specifically to his sons, and they're directed in very strong terms. Everything is focused on paying attention to godly wisdom. How many times did we hear our father or mother say, "Pay attention to me. Are you listening to me? Pay attention." And so Solomon makes no bones and no apologies about calling for his sons to pay attention to what he has to say about godly wisdom. Godly wisdom, which was proven true through the course of his own experience, and actually through the course of everyone who ever lives. In chapter 1, in verses 10 through 19, Solomon emphasized that God's wisdom will keep his sons from the temptations of ungodly people. In verses 20 through 33, he contrasts God's wisdom with people who he calls simple, fools, and mockers. Simple, in their terminology, is another word for not too bright. He treats this in greater depth again in chapters 6, 8, and 9 because he thinks it's so important that they get this. In chapter 2, in verses 1 through 10, he urges his sons to store up this godly wisdom so that they will know what is right and just and fair and have good understanding. He says this is the source of it. This godly wisdom. If you want to know these things, if you want to develop in these things, if you want this to be a focus of your life, then you need to pay attention to this godly wisdom that I'm passing on to you. In chapter 2 and verses 11 through 22, he says God's wisdom will save his sons from wicked, immoral people who will drag down their lives. I was in a premarital counseling session on one occasion with someone who said that one of their goals for life as they were getting married was to break away from the friendships that they had had and develop some really good and true friends. And when I questioned this person a little further, they said, It was because they realized their friends were dragging them down into a life that they didn't want to live. But they couldn't come to that awareness until they had been there and experienced that dragging. It kind of hit a bottom, if you will, for them anyway, where they realized, I don't want to continue going in this direction. I need to change some things. I need to change some people. Solomon gives a lot of attention to that idea of wicked and moral people who will drag you down in chapters 5 and 7, and he focuses an awful lot of that on sexual immorality. It wouldn't be the only place he'd talk about that, but he sure talks about it very straightforwardly and in words that cannot be misunderstood. In chapters 3 and 4, he tells them that by following God's wisdom, his sons will develop a good reputation and that they'll have prosperity and life and godliness. Now, to Solomon, those were important things: a good reputation, prosperity, life, and godliness. And he wanted his sons to understand and value those things as well, to see that those were really important for the quality of their lives, and that it was really an either-or kind of proposition. Either you follow your wisdom or the wisdom of people around you, which we sometimes call human wisdom or conventional wisdom, or you follow God's wisdom. You follow the wisdom of your own thinking and your own experience and your own desires and that of your friends, and they're going to get you what you ultimately do not want. But if you follow God's wisdom, it's going to get you things that you never dreamed of in terms of quality of life, of joys and blessings that you could never have imagined. Now, Solomon could say to his father David, when David was trying to teach him something about godliness, "Who are you to be telling me how to live, since you knew better and really made a mess of things?" That would have been a legitimate thing for him to say, wouldn't it? After all, look at all the ways that David made a mess of his life. And not just of his own life, but his family and actually of his nation. And look at the ways that David dishonored God, the same God who said, "David is a man after my own heart." Of course, Solomon's sons could say the same thing to him, couldn't they? And they'd be right. And maybe you can say the same thing to your parents. Who are you to be telling me how to live, considering the mess you made of your life? But despite David's and Solomon's failures, they tried to turn their lives around. They tried to do better. They tried to teach their children God's wisdom for living life better. They did that out of their shame of themselves and out of their love of their children and their God. They did not want their children to repeat their mistakes. And that may also be true of your parents. No parents are perfect, ever, in anything, however hard they try and however much they pray. Parents mean well, and parents try hard. Sometimes you wish that they would try harder to someone else and leave you alone. Sometimes parents are just trying, aren't they? But they've learned through experiences that have hurt them or others or both. They want you to be better than they've been. And so they try to teach you, and they preach at you, and they lecture at you, and they correct you and discipline you, and you don't like any of it, and they're pretty miserable too. But because they love you, and because they want you to be better and more than they've been, they keep on teaching and preaching and correcting and disciplining and lecturing. Solomon says in chapter 3 and verses 11 through 12 of Proverbs, "My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves as a father the son he delights in." Those verses are quoted in the New Testament, in Hebrews chapter 12 and verses 5 and 6. And they're followed by this in verses 7 through 11. "Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who've been trained by it. I don't know what kind of discipline you've been through, but my bottom side has permanent memories of my dad's discipline. I didn't appreciate it one little bit. And I found out later, he absolutely hated it. But he wanted me to be better than he had been, in a lot of ways. And he kept trying to get better himself. And he did. And we had some very, very difficult times when I was a teenager. Like the year and a half that we didn't speak. And that wasn't the end of it. But it got better. Because we both got better. Because we both started learning little by little the wisdom of God rather than the wisdom of ourselves. If we can accept the loving, if sometimes painful, parenting of our human parents, then we're prepared to accept the loving, sometimes painful parenting of our Heavenly Father God. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1 says to Christians, "How great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called the children of God." How great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called the children of God. It's hard to remember at the time when our parents are lecturing us and preaching at us and teaching us and correcting us and disciplining us, that they're only doing it for one reason. They want to be proud of us, and they want us to be proud of ourselves. They want us to be better than they've been. They want us to see much more at a much younger age, and to be much better adult at a much better age, and to go on to do better and better, and have even better grandchildren at some point in life. They're doing it because of their great love, that in their own ways, as imperfect as it is, they're trying to lavish on us. They want us to love them as father, as mother. And yet there's no greater love that's been lavished on us than our Heavenly Father offers. Are you one of his children? Are you ready to accept his parenting? If you are, we want to encourage you not to wait any longer, but take that step by coming forward tonight, right now, as we stand and sing this song.